Welcome to the 180 Podcast. You are listening to a teaching of the 180, a new church committed to learning to love Jesus and love like Jesus. Our prayer is that God would use this teaching to help you grow closer to Him and that you would feel moved to join us in person, where you can grow in community with the larger 180 family.
Bienvenue à la balado-diffusion de l'Église 180. Vous écoutez un enseignement de l'Église 180, une nouvelle Église qui s'est engagée à apprendre à aimer Jésus et à aimer comme Jésus. Notre prière est que Dieu utilisera cet enseignement afin de vous aider à vous rapprocher de Lui et que cela vous donne envie de vous joindre à nous en personne où vous pourrez vous épanouir au sein de la communauté qu'est la grande famille de l'Église 180.
What if Jesus sat in that chair and described you? What would He say? Would what He would say about you, would it align with what you see when you see yourself? Does my view of myself align with God's view of me? What do I think? What do you think of how God views you? And if you've been with us, we've been in a series over the past few weeks called Your Start Over. And what we've been learning in the series is that God loves to give people a fresh start, a new start. He loves to help us get a greater kind of perspective on who He is. And we've talked about how every new start that God offers us, we get this newer, deeper perspective on who God is. And today I want to talk about something very similar, that whenever God gives us a new start, He gives us a greater and bigger perspective on who we are. And so today I want to explore this question with you. Who do you think you are? Who does God think you are? Who do you think God thinks you are? I read this author once in a while. He writes for the New York Times. His name is David Brooks. You may have heard of him. He kind of talks a lot about culture, and he wrote this this book called The Road to Character a few years ago. Great book. And in this book, he kind of talks about how, in our culture, how we define ourselves. And he has these, like, he kind of gives us these two pictures, these two paths. He's like, there's a resume path and a eulogy path. And the resume path, like the way that we define ourselves, is all those things that you put in your resume. Your experience, where you went to school, your jobs, your achievements, all that stuff. The eulogy path is like, you know what a eulogy is. It's something people read at your funeral, right? So at your funeral, people don't say, well, they majored in this at McGill. No. They say, well, this person was kind. This person was humble. This person was generous. And so David Brooks wisely talks about how we live in this culture that really, we live our lives focusing most of the time on resume, on building a great resume, on really focusing on, you know, achievement and success. And we go through our lives and we never really take the time to think about how do we develop those eulogy virtues. And this was very wise. You know, we think about this and we think about how do we define ourselves? How do you think of yourself? And, you know, I'm going to keep reminding you of this, that every time God gives you a new start, every time God gives somebody a new start, He offers you a new perspective on how to view yourself and other people. And some of you know this, the Bible, first of all, the way that He does this is by getting us to pay attention to our stories. Getting us to pay attention to how we really view ourselves. And some of you know that the Bible is filled with all kinds of stories, and maybe you've never thought of it this way. The Bible, maybe you think, is, you know, just filled with commands and lists of things to do and not to do. And in reality, it's actually filled with stories. And, you know, you find big stories about nations and kings, but you also find stories about families, about individuals. And what we find is that a lot of these stories are really painful. They're really disturbing. Like, there are stories about, like, lying mothers, workaholic fathers, you know, siblings who betray each other, all kinds of family dysfunction, favoritism, affairs, rape, murder. I mean, the list goes on and on. And, you know, when we read these, we wonder, like, why did anybody think that this was important to write this down? Why does anybody think that we should remember these really painful stories? And part of the reason for that is to help us to start thinking about our own stories. That as we read these stories, we're reminded about our own stories. We're reminded about the events and the moments in our lives that have deeply shaped us and our identities. And not just the nice, memorable ones, but even the painful ones we wish we could forget. Because God cares about our stories. He cares about our stories. He wants to help us pay attention closely to our stories. God lives in reality. And whenever he gives us a new perspective on who we are, he doesn't do it by saying, just ignore, you know, your past. But he actually says, no, we're going to face those stories. We're going to face your past that has really shaped you. You know, last week, Dom, and we've talked about this a lot, we talked about something called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, which is a book that we're going to be going through. And part of Emotionally Healthy Spirituality is a section called Going Back to Go Forward. And the point is this, that before you can really enter into this new start and really heal and experience freedom, you may have to look deeply into your story and the things that have shaped you. See, because we all have scripts. Scripts. Now, if you've ever been in a play, if you've ever been like an actor, if you've been in some kind of a performance, you're given a script. A script, right? You get the script, that's your, you act that out, you memorize that. Now, when it comes to our identity, when it comes to who we think we are, we all have scripts. Scripts are the things that go on and on in our heads that we hear, that we say about who we are. For example, I'm a nobody. I can't do it. I'm invisible. Nobody knows me. I'm stupid. You know, I think a lot about this when it comes to youth because, you know, as I said, my primary role is to be with youth and to kind of lead them. And a few months ago, we had a sermon, like a teaching series called Words. And we talked about how words have this incredible power of life, of giving life, but also this incredible power of destroying people. And we talked about how some of the most powerful words that you will ever say are the words that you say about yourself, to yourself. And we go through our lives with these scripts, not really realizing how much it impacts everything. And you know what's interesting? Our culture's way of dealing with this is achievement. Just achieve. Make that resume great again. That was a joke. You get that? No? Okay. Just achieve. Just, you know, get better. Do more things. You know, just add to your resume. Make more money. Get a better job. Show those people that they're wrong. And I heard this story this week about an individual who, you know, he had a learning disability growing up as a kid. And because of that learning disability, he heard a lot of his peers, and most importantly, his dad, tell him things like, you're stupid. You're dumb. You're never going to achieve anything. You're never going to do anything. And so this boy, you know, as he grew up, he kind of determined to defy this. And so what he did is he got a master's degree, and he got a doctorate. And so he got a PhD. And you know what's interesting? Even after he had his PhD, you know what he says? I still feel stupid. I still feel stupid. And so he would talk about how, you know, he'd have these conversations with people, and if he felt that that person was, like, insinuating that he was stupid, he would just want to run away from everything and just go into a hole, even though he had a PhD. He would just feel so stupid. Because external achievements can't heal something deep inside of us that only Jesus can heal. And we try. But see, Jesus has a way of giving us a new script. How? By first helping us confront the scripts that we've been given, that we carry along with us as we live our lives. So what's your script? Maybe you have multiple scripts. One of the very common scripts that we have in our lives is, I must achieve to be loved. Again, achievement. So important in our culture. I mean, think about this. When you achieve something, all you want to do, I know for me and for, you know, people my age and maybe you just want to share it, right? Post it on Instagram. But, you know, let people know, look at what I achieved. That unless you excel in school, unless you excel in sports, in work, in church, that you are not worthy of love. Many of us know the feeling of being approved for what we do. And you know what ends up happening is that we love that feeling so much. We become addicted to that. And now there's nothing wrong with achieving, but sadly, very few of us really know the feeling and the experience of being loved just for being who we are. And, you know, in the Bible, a lot of people have scripts. They live with scripts. And they have scripts for themselves, and they have scripts for others as well. And Jesus always has this way of confronting this, of giving us this new perspective of who we are. And I want to tell you a story this morning about a guy named Matthew. And you've probably heard of this guy. He's known for writing a book of the Bible. So if you might know this, the Bible is divided into kind of two big sections, the Old Testament and the New Testament, okay? And the New Testament starts with four books about Jesus' life, okay? And they're called the Gospels. The first one, and you might ask, why is there four? Why do we need four? Well, each writer is kind of addressing specific questions and concerns, and more importantly, each writer is writing to a specific audience. And Matthew, he writes to a Jewish audience, and this is going to be important a little later on. Okay, so Matthew is addressing specific concerns that a Jewish audience would have. Now, another thing I want you to know about this, that most of the time as these writers are writing these stories, they're not necessarily writing them in chronological order. They're actually editing things. They're like putting things in specific places, and they do that in an intentional way to get us to have like a bigger picture of what Jesus is doing. And so Matthew, as he's telling the story, he's going to tell his own story. And he's going to insert his story in a very specific location. And what we find is that story after story after story, there's Jesus healing people. Okay, all these external healings, right? He's giving them their sight. He's healing, you know, he heals a blind man. He raises a girl from the dead, and he heals another blind man. He's doing all these amazing miracles. And right kind of in between all of these miracles, Matthew puts his story in. And it's kind of this really amazing way of saying, hey, when Jesus encountered me, it was as if I experienced a deeper kind of healing. I experienced a kind of healing that was so much bigger than just physical healing. So much bigger than just receiving my sight or being healed of sickness. He's saying, man, there's a kind of healing that Jesus wants for people that is much, much more than just the physical one. And this is in the stories of the Gospels. You know, people experience physical healing and still miss on what God really wants to do in their lives. This is so important because we live in a culture that loves this extraordinary healings, and that's great. But Matthew's like, hey, there's something about a healing that Jesus does inside of us. And so this is how the story starts. Matthew 9:9, it's going to show up on the screen. And this is how it goes. As Jesus went on from there with other people he's healing, right? So that's where he's coming from. He saw a man named Matthew sitting at a tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him. And Matthew got up and followed him. Okay, a lot of stuff going on. You could actually leave that verse up there. And the first thing I want to talk about is tax collectors. Okay, tax collectors in the ancient world, first of all, no good Jew in that world just wakes up one morning and says, you know what? I think I'm going to be a tax collector. Nobody does that. No good Jew does that. You know why? Because everybody knows that to be a tax collector in that day meant social rejection. It meant nobody would invite you over. It meant you would be known as this traitor, someone who betrayed his country and his God, because every Jew believed that God was going to set Israel free from big bad Rome. Rome was in power, and to be a tax collector meant that you were collecting taxes for Rome. So a tax collector was hated for two reasons. Number one, being a traitor. And number two, they were known for skimming, right? So just charging a little bit more and getting rich. So not only was he a traitor, but he was getting rich from being a traitor. So I'm thinking about Matthew. Now, we don't have a lot of information about Matthew's story, but like, let's just imagine for a second. Matthew, there's no way he could just wake up and decide that he's going to be a tax collector. Most likely, he had a script. Maybe the script went like this. I don't belong with these people. I don't fit in. I'm worthless. I'm nothing. Nobody understands me. Nobody gets me. So you know what? I'll just be a tax collector. See how easy that was? See, I don't think he really wanted to be a tax collector. In fact, look at the story. He gets up so quickly. I don't think he really wants to live this life that he's living. See, because scripts have so much power in our lives. We start off with these words like, nobody knows me, nobody gets me. I'm nothing, I'm worthless, and we believe it, and it makes it so easy for us to say, yeah, I'll just be a tax collector, whatever. Or what we do is we choose to ignore those scripts. We pretend like they're not there. I have a question. Ever have a moment in your life where you look at yourself and you wonder, you're like, how on earth did I get here? How did I become this person? How am I such a jealous person, like filled with bitterness and judgmentalism, and I'm always lying to people, and I have trust issues, and I trust nobody? How did I get here? I run away from relationships when, as soon as they get too close, I run away. Like, why am I doing all these things? Well, maybe you've been ignoring those scripts. Maybe you've been covering those scripts up with achievements. See, the scripts that we often ignore are the reasons. They are the things that cause us to make some of the biggest mistakes of our lives. They destroy families. They destroy communities. They destroy relationships. And, you know, I have to think about this often as a youth pastor, and I do. I think about, you know, our youth and how they are shaping their identity and their, you know, their stories and their sense of, you know, who they are. Their scripts are being shaped every day at their age, especially. So parents, what scripts are you giving your kids? Let's put it this way. If we planted a microphone and a camera in your house, and we're going to play it here, and we looked at all the conversations and all the different ways, all the interactions, think about it. What scripts are you giving your kids? Do you think about this? We're about to have a kid, and I think about this a lot because I know Bethany and I, mostly Bethany, is going to give our son, I almost said his name, that was a close one, going to give him, you're never going to guess it, we're going to give him a script. We're going to give him a script. What's that script going to be? It's a scary thought. Listen, our achievements are great. Excelling in school is great. Excelling when it comes to your grades is great. In the arts, it's great. Becoming class president is so great. You know, being on the student council is so great. And a lot of our kids are those leaders. They're excelling. They're achieving. And I'm like, wow, amazing. But do your kids know that nothing they do or don't do can ever make you love them more or less? You know, there's a lot of research around this kind of thing, identity and all that stuff. And what we know from our friend science, we know that kids and teenagers especially, and even adults, are more likely to act rebellious when they feel, keyword, when they feel as though they are perceived as rebellious. Scripts have such an incredible power. Think about the words that you say. When you say, man, you are so weird. Now, I know there's times of playfulness, but and joking around. But think about what the words that we say that come out of our mouths. Like, you are such a strange kid. Why are you so rebellious? Why can't you be more like your sister? Why can't you be, you know, less antisocial? Why do you have to be so awkward? These are powerful things. How do you see your kids? And if maybe you're like, I don't have kids. Well, how do you see other people? How do you see yourself? See, because Matthew, or Jesus, I should say, when he sees Matthew, he doesn't just see a tax collector. When Jesus sees, and I bolden the word saw there, because when Jesus sees this person, he doesn't just see a tax collector. He sees something big. He sees endless possibilities. He sees a man who will one day write a book of the Bible. He sees so much more than what everybody else sees. Everybody sees a rebel, a traitor, a loser. Maybe you're here and you're wondering how Jesus sees you, if Jesus sees you. He does. He sees you. Despite your story, despite your past, despite what you've done, Jesus sees you. And he sees more than just your achievements. You know, a few months ago, some of you know that I took a part-time job working at a coffee shop, and this is like a kind of another passion of mine is being a barista. And this wasn't really a coffee shop, but it was more like a little bar. I was by myself in a clothing store, and many of you came to visit me. Thank you for visiting me. Those of you who didn't, well, you're dead to me. No, I'm just kidding. That was a bad joke. I won't say that. Okay. And so I remember thinking, you know, when you work in the service industry, some of you know this, and you start to kind of like know people, and you're like, and I found myself like categorizing people. Two basic categories, tippers and non-tippers. So I know you. You don't tip. I'm just going to whip something up and give it to them. No, and I found myself in this moment where God was like, hey, do you see these people the way I see them? Do you know that when you are encountering these strangers, that I'm at work in their lives? Even though they don't tip God? Yes. Jesus sees more than just Matthew, more than just a tax collector. And then Jesus says, follow me. I love this because, you know, this is a beautiful beautiful picture, an invitation of just starting over. Come start over with me. You know, it's interesting because oftentimes, I know for me growing up, my view of God was that when we mess up, he's far away. He's further away. That every time I mess up, it's like, oh, he's even further than he already was. And a few months ago, I was hanging out with one of my friends who, you know, we grew up together in church, and we were really close. And now, you know, I'm a pastor, and he doesn't go to church. And I was hanging out with him, and we were talking, and every time we hang out, he loves to talk about God. And he loves to ask questions, and he said to me, he's like, Mateo, I made too many mistakes. I've made way too many mistakes. And so God is like really, really far. He's really, really far from me, and he's probably trying to talk to me, but I can't hear him because he's too, too far. And I'm like, no, that's not how it works. It doesn't get further away from you. That's like a picture of God that's like a go-to-your-room kind of God, right? When he's mad at you, when you mess up, he says, go to your room, get away from me. No, what we see with Jesus is like, no, when you mess up, even in your worst moments, I'm coming to you. I'm coming towards you, not away from you. I'm coming to your level, and I see you. Amazing. And then it says that Matthew got up, and you know, I was looking just at the original language, which is Greek, and maybe a better translation would be he arose. And Matthew uses this word; it's a Greek word, and it's the very same Greek word that is used to describe Jesus' resurrection. This is like amazing artistry. I get excited about this. I hope you do too. And so what he's saying. He's saying, like, when Jesus saw me, I experienced a certain kind of resurrection. I experienced the beginning of the end of those scripts that were defining me, that were making me, that were taking control of my life. The scripts that have led me to this place have no more power over me. Something new is coming to life. That's what happened to Matthew. So, let's keep going in the story. Verse 10 and 11 say this: while Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" Okay, so Jesus loves parties. Guy decides, "Yep, I'm going to follow you. Great, let's go eat. Let's go have a party." Jesus loves this, and so he goes into Matthew's world, into his like community, into his life. He gets deeper into Matthew's world, and he goes to eat. To eat with someone would be to kind of put yourself on the same level. And he's eating with other tax collectors and sinners, and this word sinners is kind of a way that people use to describe people who they believed were far from God. So there's kind of an irony here. Jesus, the God guy, is with sinners who are far from God. This is weird. And so there's this big party, and the Pharisees hear about it. And what you kind of need to know about the Pharisees, because they are the ones who are known or have this reputation of being the ones who are close to God, being really tight with God. They are the leaders. They're the ones that everybody respects. And the thing about Pharisees is that they loved the scripts in their own lives. They love assigning scripts to other people. Their script: I'm close to God, all those people far from God. Sinners, right? All of those tax collectors are sinners. That's what he did. They just put them all in the same group. All tax collectors are far from God. Now, today we live in 2017. We still have this problem. All Muslims are blank. All French people are whatever. All men, all women, all Americans, all people who drive slow in the left lane are stupid. Let's just keep that one. How about we keep? Let's keep that one. And the Pharisees are like, how on earth can this guy, who's a teacher, be with this person? Not only hang out with them, but eat with them. See, because Jesus loves to offer a fresh start, a start over to the people that we least expect. Do you think God sees you? He does. He sees you and he wants to set you free. He wants to rewrite your story. The stories that say, I'm a failure. I'm a nobody. I'm useless. I'm stupid. Jesus says, no. Follow me. Two things. Are you a Pharisee? Do you identify with the Pharisee? It's saying, do you ever catch yourself saying, hey, all tax collectors are sinners. All this people, all that people, they're all bad. That's a big question. Second question is this, or comment. There will be Pharisees in your life who say, Jesus isn't at work in you. You're far from God. You're scum. You're a loser. Are you ready for that? See, Jesus now is going to respond to these so-called religious leaders. And this is what he says, verse 12 and 13. He says, on hearing this, Jesus said, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Okay. So Jesus now, remember where the story is, it's right kind of smack in the middle of a whole lot of physical healings. And it's in this story where Jesus is going to refer to himself as a doctor. And what he's saying is that he's doing a special kind of healing right now. That he's doing a special healing of the heart. That he's rewriting scripts. And you testing? All right, I'm back. What he says is the ones who will experience that healing that I'm doing are those who know they need it. Why? Because nobody goes to see a doctor unless you know that you're sick. Nobody goes to the doctor unless you know you need a doctor. So what he's saying, kind of in a sneaky way, in a very Jesus way, he says, if you think you're healthy, Pharisees, you'll never heal. Whoa. You think you could go through your lives just ignoring scripts? You can't put a Band-Aid on a wound that needs surgery. It's going to spread everywhere. You won't heal. And then Jesus says, go. Learn what this means. And then he's saying, go back, read the Bible, and go see what this means. And he quotes, I desire mercy, not sacrifice. And he's quoting from a prophet who's speaking on behalf of God, who is saying that the point in all of this, the point in the sacrifice, you might know Israel had a sacrificial system, that the sacrificial system was not the goal, the main point of what God was doing. You could do all the religious stuff and still miss the big point, which is that you would become people marked by mercy. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. You missed it. That you would become people who give others a start over. That you would become people who give others a new script. He's saying this to the Pharisees, that you would make room in your lives for tax collectors. And you call yourself a leader? See, God's start over never ends with you. When God gives a start over, when God gives you a new script, it doesn't end with you. It's so powerful that it's contagious. When you get it, you pass it on and it spreads through you. And when God offers us a start over, he invites us to be the kinds of people who offer start overs to others. Make room for people to start over. Pharisees never got this. They never got this. And God, you know, he's always done this. He's always done this. He loves this. He loves teaching his people how to make room for others. How to make room for people to have a start over. And I'll give you two examples. I'll tell you a story, and it's going to kind of rewind in the story of Israel. And it starts with this guy, you probably heard of him, Abraham. Father Abraham. You know it, right? I'm not going to sing it. So Abraham lived in a time where your tribe, the tribe that you were part of, was everything. Your tribe was your identity. If you're not part of a tribe, you are dead or a slave. And this was a day, this was a time before, and you know this, I think, before like Google Maps and internet and government and police. So you can't like call the police. You can't call the United Nations and be like, hey, that nation is coming after us. No, there's none of that, right? Your tribe is everything. You need to be part of a tribe because or else you're dead. And so Abraham lives in a time where tribes are everything. And your goal as a tribe, for your own kind of self-preservation, this was kind of the norm, was to grow as a tribe so that you could conquer other tribes that might be a threat. And now God one day says to Abraham, and he says, hey, Abe, we're going to start a new tribe, a new kind of tribe. No one's ever heard of this kind of tribe. This is the kind of tribe that's going to change the world. We're going to create a tribe where now your tribe is going to grow and it's going to flourish so that you could bless other tribes. Can you imagine like Abraham's look on his face? What do you mean, bless other tribes? They're crazy. They're going to kill us. And God's like, no. I'm going to make your tribe a tribe that exists for the sake of others. And it's you could see it up on the screen, Genesis 12:3. This is what God says. It says, all peoples or all tribes of the earth will be blessed through you. This was such a radical idea in a world where tribes exist to conquer other tribes. And God's like, no, you're going to bless others. God's like, I'm doing a new thing. I'm writing a new script for the world. This is huge. I'm going to give you another example. Later on in the story of Israel, God, you might know this, God gives Israel a law. And there's different aspects of this law. It was very common in that world, in the ancient Near East, for your nation to have a law. And in this law, there was a few things that were really radical, like really amazing, really like progressive. And one of the things that I want to tell you about is that in the law it said, if you have land, okay, if you have land, when it's harvest time, you've worked it all year, it's harvest time, you're going to go get your food. Now, leave a part of your land unharvested. What? I worked for that land. Are you crazy? Why would I do that? Why? Because there's going to be poor people. There's going to be foreigners. There's going to be refugees. There's going to be widows and orphans. And I want to teach you to leave that for them because I'm helping you be the kinds of people who show mercy, who offer startovers. This is amazing. God loves offering startovers to the people we least expect. And he uses the people we least expect, the people the world ignores. Startovers are possible for everyone. And God says, I'm going to use you for something so much bigger for the sake of the world. So where are you today? What's your script? How does God see you? Are you Matthew? Are you maybe a bit like a Pharisee? You know, I have had conversations with people here and in previous contexts with teenagers and with adults, and I talk and we're talking about maybe joining a surf team, and I ask, hey, maybe it's time for you to kind of be part of a team and serve. And they kind of look at me with this blank stare, and I know the scripts are going, right? The scripts. Does this person even know what I am? Like what I've done? This person has no idea of my past and the mistakes that I've made and the life that I've lived. Me? Serve? See, Jesus says, yeah, follow me. We'll address those scripts. I'm going to give you a new script. And maybe you have a view. We all have these kind of myths in our minds or things that we believe about who God uses and who God can or cannot use. Maybe God only uses people with, you know, special gifts. Or, you know, he only uses people who are really energetic and loud. Or God only uses young people. Or God only uses old people. Or educated people. Or non-educated people. Or white people. Or straight people. God only uses certain kinds of people. Do you know that God wants to use you? Give you a new story, a new identity, a new purpose? When he sees you, he doesn't see what you see. He doesn't see a tax collector. Just follow me. I want to remind you, I said it earlier, that Matthew wrote this book to Jews. People who hated him. He wrote this book to people that you know, kind of pushed him out of their lives. He wrote this to the people who gave him a script saying, you're a liar, you're a traitor, you're a thief. And Matthew says, no. But God is healing something in me, and I have to write this and send it to my fellow Jews. Can you imagine? Matthew would have never written this book if he believed those scripts. It would have just been like Mark, Luke, John. Yeah. I have to do that in my head. Mark, Luke, John. That would have been weird. Hey, maybe, here's something. Maybe you know people in your lives that live with a script that's destroying them. Maybe God is asking you to be the person to step in and say, hey, Jesus sees you. Maybe you need to be that person. I think about the video that we saw, and maybe there's someone in your mind, someone in your life that you could imagine sitting in that chair, describing themselves. And maybe Jesus is asking you to say, hey, let them know who they are. Remind them that there's nothing they could do or not do that will make me, Jesus, love them more or less. I think this is what we're about as a church. And we're making room. We want to make room for people who feel like there's everything they've done in their lives have made them so far from God. Know this, Jesus sees you. Jesus is coming towards you, not pushing you away. That's what he does. Jesus is in the business of rewriting scripts and inviting us to do the same.